This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
This is the podcast making public transit taking kiss stealing wheeling dealing son of a gun Tim the Nerd welcoming you to another episode of Friends Talking Nerdy, part of the Deluxe Edition Network. Head to deluxeeditionnetwork.com to find out more information about all of the shows on DIN. Sitting next to me, we have the greatest legal mind in the Pacific Northwest, the best Thanksgiving cooker I know. Professor Aubrey, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Tim. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Besides wheeling and dealing, kiss and kiss stealing.
Yeah. All the time, every day. That's my motto, you know.
Yep. Doing it all the time. How's your week been?
So far, so good. Can't really complain that much. I mean, I think the big thing, of course, is that we finally do got it set in stone to get the cats theirs spayed and shots and all that other stuff so that, you know, they got the latest software updates and all that.
Yeah, that's about 3 weeks away, and we certainly have been waiting. And what we ended up having to do to get it at an affordable price and actually to access it at all, because I looked for a vet, I think I've probably talked about this, but looked for a vet for quite a while and couldn't find any that were taking new patients or that called me back at all, sort of like trying to find a contractor. And so I was sort of at my wit's end, and the places I did talk to that said they might have availability were like $500 each. So I knew there was a program through the Humane Society, but it was very hard to get into, and so we had to try to sign up several times before we were successful, but we were ultimately successful. Yay, Humane Society. And so we're going to be able to take our cats to the new community health center at the Oregon Humane Society, which is a teaching facility to teach vets how to do kind of herd management. So to provide that sort of basic wellness and preventative care to a lot of animals.
I am definitely looking forward to that. I think she doesn't even realize it, but Mimsy will look forward to that as well, because she will not have to go through the symptoms of being in heat again. But, I think one thing I'm learning about myself too, and, you know, we've talked about this while we're not recording, is how much they're teaching me. And I think with what I'm liking results wise is, and I have you partly to thank for this too, is just changing my mindset with them in terms of when it's time to tell them not to do something and when I should just suck it up, buddy, because they're cats.
So how have I influenced that?
Well, I mean, like you mentioned it, like, you know, when the cats first got here, you know, like you noticed that I would, you know, like, oh my God, don't do that. Oh my God, don't do that. Just helicoptering. Mm-hmm. And, that made me a little more mindful of it. And, you know, thinking about that got me thinking about, you know, them, they're cats, you know, like with a kid, there is some point with a kid that, you know, even with the young ones that you can kind of, you know, talk to them and say, this is why I don't want you doing this. And most kids are going to be cool, you know, but you're never going to get that with a cat because they're just cats.
And you can't communicate with a cat. Like, I wouldn't say they're just cats. I mean, mm-hmm. They're just as valid as us.
Well, of course. Yeah. But you get my point.
We can't communicate with them effectively. To say, this is why, like, I'm trying to help you, or I'm trying to prevent something bad from happening to you, or I'm trying to preserve my television, or whatever it is that you're trying to do.
Well, what I've done and what I think has, you know, shown some great results is reward them for listening. What do I mean by that? You mentioned the TV. Mimsy, we've talked about this on the show before. She loves jumping up in front of the TV and then looking at, over at us like, what? I'm just sitting here all pretty and
what?
Stuff.
Pay attention to me.
Yeah. And it took a while on my part not to just immediately jump and go, get down, you know, or something like that. And now my mindset with her is if there's not something I'm doing immediately on the TV, like watching TV or playing a video game, or if she's not in getting into any trouble, you know, there are a couple times where I've seen her try to walk behind the TV at that point. It's no. But when I say no or get down from there and they get down, what I try to make it a point to do is go to her immediately, or to Annie if I have to do the same thing, and pat them and be like, thank you for listening. They don't understand the words that are coming out of my mouth, but I want them to associate me saying no with them thinking, he just doesn't want me doing this now.
Right.
You know, and I think that seems to be working.
Yeah.
Yeah, because especially with Mimsy, she's not the extrovert Annie is. And I think Mimsy, like, just, she wants to please. And I've noticed in the past that, you know, if I've had to tell her no about something, that she's a small cat. You know, I'm 6'5". And, you know, hearing me with a loud voice, I think I scared her a couple times. And I think, you know, me kind of changing course and you know, doing what I just said I was doing, kind of praising them for listening, has worked. And I think it's shown a lot of results with her, especially.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think she ultimately, what she wants is attention and approval. So I think she's very motivated by that sort of emotional side. And I think Annie is too, really. Like, as opposed to just being food seeking, they more respond to attention.
Oh, like the past couple of days, like, you know, when we are both in the office and then all of a sudden I'll, you know, hear the as you said, the most pathetic meow in the world right next to me. And it's Annie rubbing against my legs. And then she'll hop in the windowsill, hop on, you know, next to the computer or next to your computer and walk around. And when she's doing that, it's like, let's play, mister, because I get her feather toy or her string toy and, you know, do kitty fishing. And, you know, then after 10 minutes, she leaves me alone.
Yeah.
You know,
she's just really good at asserting herself.
Not even asserting herself. I mean, that's her way of saying it, you know, can I have spend some time with you?
Yeah.
You know, and if you have the ability to do so with an animal in your life, you should. Even if it's just for a couple of minutes. Even if it's, you know, just, you know, like picking them up, sitting them in your lap for 30 seconds and petting them, telling them you love them, and then putting them down. That's something. And that's responding to them. You know, that's a way to communicate with an animal, I think, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yep. But we love our cats here, and when we get get them spayed and get the other things, you know, the vaccines and stuff injected into them, we'll give you an update, of course, because that will be an interesting week.
Yeah, so we're going to have to get the old department out that Sherman used to say in on his many misadventures and or surgeries.
I hope, but knowing our cats, they will. Like, you mentioned Sherman having to live in that. And the one time I saw that happen, he was out of there in about 20 minutes because you couldn't stand him looking so sad.
I'm telling you, he had me wrapped around his little paw.
Oh, and his pictures around that time, too, were so funny because, funny in this way, folks, not funny because, haha, he's suffering, but funny when he would be there with Phil. Because Phil took it upon himself when Sherman had the cone on to, like, be there next to him all the time. And when he was, like, lying down, he would lick Sherman's fur that Sherman couldn't get to and just lie down next to him and be a good buddy.
Oh, so sweet. Mm. They were so sweet.
They were two special creatures in our lives that I'm glad they had each other too, because you never know with cats. Dogs are generally, for the most part, going to pal around.
Be okay, at least.
Yeah, but cats.
And that's the only other fellow cat, like roommate, that Sherman had that he ever liked. That he ever cuddled with or licked. Like, he never licked Miss Kitty and he never licked Tilly. He and Tilly would wrestle, but they would never, like, snuggle up together.
Oh, yeah. And Phil and Sherman did it within 3 days.
Yeah.
Within 3 days. And we've used some of their photos, too, for, like, promotion for the show. Like, when they, you know, had their paws around each other and just lying there.
They had a super bromance.
Yeah. But it's, like, kind of like grumpy old men in a way, but it's beautiful that, you know, two elderly cats got to have the time of their lives on the last part of their journey.
Yeah.
Well, this time of year, as we, as you folks hear this, it will be December, but we're recording this before Thanksgiving here. It now is holiday movie time, and the movies are still, in a way, recovering from the pandemic. And I think we're seeing some interesting things out there in terms of what shakeups we might be seeing, because, you know, people tend to get stuck in the moment when it comes to pop culture and think, like, this is going to last forever. And then 6 months later, nobody is talking about it ever again. Mm-hmm. And you know, everything comes in waves, just like, you know, most every movie back in the early part of cinema was a Western. And now we don't get many Westerns. Superhero fatigue could be a thing, but we wanted to talk about a couple of movie experiences, not that one that we didn't necessarily go to, but have commented about enough on the show with the company that made it that, you know, we can, you know, have a conversation about it. But first and foremost, Martin Scorsese has a new film out. He is a master of cinema. And he's one of those guys that if you get a chance to see his work, whether big screen or small, you take time out of your day to do so. Tell us about Killers of the Flower Moon.
I will say that this time of year is great for movies because it is Oscar season. It is getting colder, so more people are going to the movies. And you got your big holiday blockbusters for people to go see when they cannot stay in their family anymore. So we're sort of on the precipice of that. And I saw Scorsese's new film, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Let me guess. Leonardo DiCaprio's in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Scorsese, he's unlike Lucas, Scorsese has no problem using the same actors over and over and over again. Because a lot of times when it comes to the behind-the-scenes stuff, like Scorsese has a crew he assembles. And same with his actors. So go ahead.
Leo was really good in it, I thought. The story is about the tribe that struck oil and the consequences of that and how
white people stole it.
How white people abused them. You know, they got some power. And it really has its parallels, I think, with casinos currently, because tribes are making a lot of money off of casinos.
And interesting that Scorsese is behind that, because he has a history of, you know, looking at the Italian side of casinos with stuff like Goodfellas and especially Casino.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this wasn't about that.
But same type of feeling you're trying to say?
Same type of feeling that, like, when the downtrodden, who've had everything stolen from them, including their personhood, get rich, you know, and are able to have all the things that we have, and are not destitute and living in poverty and having medical problems and sort of all the things that come with that reservation or concentration camp sort of life. And so this tribe was sort of having that experience. And like I said, it's about the consequences of that. So it's really good. And I was afraid because it is long, but it was really riveting. It was really beautiful. It was beautifully filmed. The sets were beautiful. The costumes were great. Everything about it was just really high quality.
Produced by Apple, if I'm not mistaken.
Right? Produced by Apple, exactly.
Yeah, because there's a shorter wait time between a movie's run in theaters and compared to when it's going to be on streaming, a lot of companies like Apple are now getting into the movie-making business, so they have content for their apps.
right? And exclusive content.
Yeah, which is interesting because who really, and John Oliver, of course, talked about this on one of his recent episodes as we record this, but who watches Apple TV Plus, you know, apart from maybe, I mean, I know people liked Ted Lasso, but, you know, like, just because that was a big thing on social media at the time, I don't think Ted Lasso was like rivaling the last episode of MASH or anything, you know?
Or even the last episode of Game of Thrones.
Or the last episode of Friends Talking Nerdy, I don't know.
That's right. We'll see when we come to the end of the line.
But
we'll fly away in a helicopter, just like on MASH.
Something like that, yeah, and I'll be weeping. Anyway, it is, on the one hand, it's good that people like Scorsese still have a chance to, you know, make movies like this, even if it's with shady companies like Apple. I say this from experience, folks. Because it is important that we do have stories like this told on the big screen. You know, as someone who is an unabashed fan of wild and wacky genre movies, I still very much appreciate the fact that, you know, movies that are important, movies that tell a story, movies that can touch your heart are also important as well in theaters. And it's, even though it's coming from Martin Scorsese and not from a lesser known person, at least the story's out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an important movie. I think people should see it.
Yeah, and, you know, Scorsese is, like, one of those artists, too, that, you know, he's reached that age to where if you're a fan of his, you support everything he does, because you don't know when you're going to wake up one day and then, you know, go to the news choice of your, news site of your choice to find out that, you know, he's no longer with us or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty old.
He is. I mean, you know, making movies since the 60s. I didn't realize this until later. He was the editor on Woodstock.
Really?
He's the one who came up with the split screen, you know, situation that made that film so famous. So, and of course, he was tight with all the other 70 brat directors as well, like your George Lucas, Spielbergs, Brian De Palma's, people like that. But and also, too, you know the TV show Alice?
Mm-hmm.
That's based off of one of his early movies. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
That was a great show.
In fact, Vic Tayback, who played Mel on the show, played Mel in the movie. That's really? The only character that...
I would love to see that movie.
Yeah, it's one of his earlier ones. I don't know where it's streaming, but I'm sure it's probably somewhere. Anyway, I want to talk about a movie bomb now.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Marvels. Story about Captain Marvel. I forget, don't know what they named her in this movie, but Monica Rambeau, who was the original female Captain Marvel in the comics, at least, was in there. And then we had one of my favorite comic characters from the past 20, 30 years, Miss Marvel, in the movie. And for Marvel standards, it didn't do well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's looking like that this may be one of the first Marvel movies that doesn't necessarily make its money back. Because when it debuted and then the week after, they saw a 78% drop in attendance, which between week one and week two for any movie, even something, unless it's something special like a Titanic or Avengers Endgame or something like that, it's usually... you get my point. The first week is going to be the week where most everybody goes out, and then audience sizes will dwindle as the weeks go on.
Right.
You know, and if you see a 78% drop, that's telling you that, you know, you're not going to get the repeat business. You're not going to get a $1 billion movie or anything like that. And when it comes to the Marvels, I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on, you know, the quality of the film, because there are plenty of films that have bombed at the box office that are still good films, right?
Yeah.
You know, like financial success for any sort of art doesn't equate quality. But I think this does kind of speak to kind of the extreme oversaturation Marvel has given the world since, you know, WandaVision on after, you know, after Avengers Endgame. Because if you listen to the early days of the show when we talked about Marvel stuff, it was always an event. Now
it was exciting.
It was exciting, even for movies like that, you know. But now it's just Thursday that a new Marvel thing is out, if you get my point. Because, like,
yeah, and all the stuff on Disney Plus.
That's the thing right there, because what happened is this. You had Bob Iger, who is the current CEO, but this is his second run as CEO.
Right.
You know, he's the one that initially had Disney buy Marvel. And, you know, through, you know, political machinations, what ended up happening is Kevin Feige, the head of Marvel Studios, ended up, you know, his only direct superior with Bob Iger in his first run was Kevin Feige would talk to Bob Iger, and that's it. Mm. Then they had a guy named Bob Chapek become CEO of Disney after Bob Iger initially left, and then Chapek decided to change that up. Kevin Feige had to talk to a couple of other people, and those people started making him, you know, go all in on the Disney Plus, which I don't mind the TV shows at all, but I think the big problem is what they did on Disney Plus. Oversaturation.
We did so much. There's so much. I mean, with the Star Wars stuff, with the Marvel stuff, it's just really watering down the impact of those stories.
Yeah, it's not an event. And with what we've become accustomed to as Marvel fans for the types of stories that they tell, like, there is no way to really get a firm grip on, you know, where things are compared. I mean, this is the start of a new phase. Like, Marvel had phase one and phase two and phase three for their original movies up until Endgame. And it told, for the most part, a general story throughout, but each film was still a good self-contained piece. And I think they've also felt, but I think Marvel also felt guilty to trying to make everything seem like it was part of some big grand thing. And again, even someone like me was just overwhelmed. And, you know, I quickly lost interest during the TV era.
Mm-hmm.
And, because of the pandemic, I didn't see a number of the films apart from Black Widow in theater. And even Black Widow, like, when you make creative choices, like having a final battle in a sky fortress that explodes and then crashes down to Earth, and the hero survives that without a scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. You know, like, I don't need to see, like, them in traction. I don't need to see, like, a complete body cast or anything like that. It is a movie. It is hyper-reality. So I expect cuts and bruises, torn outfits or something like that. But just coming down, outfit clean, hair perfect for Scarlett Johansson and whatnot. It's just like, come on. Put a little more effort
into
this. Like, you know, just a lot of the choices they've made just haven't worked. And it's, you know, when you have an entertainment property like this that does get to this point to where fans are stating, I think I've had enough, it is really, really hard to reverse that.
Yeah.
Like, James Bond has done it a couple of times. And, like, with the Timothy Dalton License to Kill, which is actually a good movie, but that debuted in 89, the same year as Batman, the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and, you know, a gritty, dark James Bond movie wasn't going to compete with those. But that almost killed the franchise. But they were able to come back with Goldfinger a few years later. You know, time does heal wounds. And come out with a great movie. So it's certainly possible. And in Marvel's case, they do actually have that bit of a wait period coming up, because apart from Deadpool 3 next year, there is no new Marvel project until 2025.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, I'm, you know, I don't want to see people put out of work, and I do want to see the stories of the, you know, the characters that I care for in the Marvel Universe told in a way that honors them and, you know, utilizes them in the right way. But we need a break.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's just too much.
I think it also shows the importance of having variety in theaters, because too often, at least in your corporate theaters, not necessarily like the Hollywood or Laurelhurst in Portland here, but like your Regals, your AMCs, most of the film choices you have are going to be like a Marvel film, not necessarily superhero, but a genre film or a sequel or a reboot or something like that. And, you know,
Barbie, right? Which is kind of a reboot of a cultural phenomenon.
I mean, I haven't seen that movie, so I can't comment. But to your point, yeah. I mean, at the very least, to Barbie's credit, I mean, they did have Greta Gerwig, of all people, directing that movie. And I believe she wrote it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that is one I hope to see someday. But I think movies are changing, you know? I mean, because it's been about 20 years for Marvel, roughly, and not every generation is going to like the entertainment choices from the generation before them. Things evolve, tastes change. And, you know, do I think Marvel will go bankrupt? Of course not. They're still going to make movies. They're still going to make TV shows. Maybe not any more Captain Marvel movies, to be clear. But, you know, I think this hopefully will be a good thing for them and allow them to really work at putting out the best possible product and not all the products they can. You know, especially with a creative endeavor, you know, if you get to the oversaturation route, you know, you're going to lose the audience, because it's all about connection. And with a superhero movie, we as fans, it can accept a lot. You know, it's just, you go too much, you're going to lose them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on holidays? On movies during the holidays?
Nope.
Okay. Brevity is the soul of wit, as they say.
As they say.
All right. Before we get to our main event, how about we take some time to hear from one of our friends at the Deluxe Edition Network?
Oh my gosh, that is such a great idea.
Indeed. Drinking game.
High five.
Oh, there. I thought you were going to deny me. But all right, ladies and gentlemen, sit back, relax, and enjoy this word from one of our friends at the Deluxe Edition Network.
What's up, everybody? I'm Matt, the host of the Beard Laws Podcast, a podcast that has nothing to do with beards, a podcast where we aim to entertain and interact with our live viewers, but our listeners. They're like the quiet person that never talks sitting around the bonfire because the rest of the group is so entertaining, hilarious, wild, and a little bit dumb. So grab a drink, grab a snack, and let Beard Laws and the boys, Toby, Brandon, Logan, Zach, Richie, and our occasional special guest entertain you. We're live on the Beard Laws YouTube Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and for every reason you want to see us and or our beards. Check us out, thebeardlawspodcast.com. We're everywhere.
It's that time of year again, folks. It's the holidays.
You know what that means.
Yes, it means you are going to be doing all the uncomfortable things you hate doing every other time of the year, but do it because it's the holidays.
Yeah, I mean, there is this great pull to nostalgia, to family, whatever that might mean to you.
Mm-hmm.
And to togetherness of the winter. I enjoy it because it's kind of the alternative to seeing everybody throughout the summer when you're out doing stuff. We don't really do that in the winter so much. So it's nice to have this like moment that you're connected. I do things. I usually like bite off too much for comfort. Like I can do it all.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, I kind of think, wow, why did I want to do this? Why did I want to do all of this? So, for example, when last year I did little boxes with candy and cookies and that sort of thing.
I even got one in Maine.
You did get one in Maine. What did you think of it?
I thought it was good and shared it with the Mr. and Mrs. Reverend.
And did they enjoy it?
They did.
Excellent. So it was like five different kinds of treats in a little box. And so I had to make these five different kinds of treats, and I've made 24 of these boxes. So five kinds of cookies, about five of each of the cookies times 24. It was a lot. It was a lot.
It was a million.
It was like a million cookies, man, and pieces of candy and meringues and all kinds of goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people loved them. So I'm going to try to do something similar this year, but it's not to that yet. Now we are just preparing for the big meal on Thursday. I am making a cheesecake. The bread, so I'm making sort of sweet yeast rolls, as well as country-style biscuits, and stuffing. Mm-hmm. These are my, you know, jobs, and I'm very excited about it. At the same time, I'm like, really, I'm going to make a cheesecake? And I'm making a cheesecake tomorrow, right? So I'm like, really, I'm going to make a cheesecake tomorrow? Like, I haven't made a cheesecake ever in my life.
So we'll have this on results of this on TikTok. No, I'm kidding.
We should maybe do something with it, though.
There you go. We could promote it.
Yeah.
Cooking with the professor.
We did a cake competition once. We did, you know, we've done some food stuff in the past.
Back in the early days of the show, yeah, I think we would do it a lot differently than we did with that one, but it was still fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a little too long.
A lot of the earlier episodes, were a little too long.
A little too long.
That's the beautiful thing about evolution, folks. Like I said, we here at Friends Talking Nerdy put our best in for each and every episode. And each episode we put out is the best one we can put out at the time we put out. But the older your show gets, the more you will look back on your earlier days and be like, we could have done so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Fight that as much as you can. Because again, if you are truly coming at it as every episode I'm putting out is the best I can put out, you're doing your best. That's all you can do.
That is all you can do, really.
I mean, you don't want to rest on your laurels by any means, and I'm not suggesting that, but, you know, you do kind of want to fight that feeling because, you know, you're not going to get to the good parts unless the bad parts are there. I think anybody who's done anything creative, whether it be music with a guitar or, you know, writing or something like that, there's no such thing as a perfect first draft. You got to keep on writing and keep on writing until you get it right. And the same thing with podcasting.
Yeah, I mean, same thing with my kind of work as well. Yeah. Maybe many things. Anything's where you're creative, and there's creativity in almost everything that we do.
I agree with that. Now, me, when it comes to holidays, I've told the story about my aunt on the show quite a few times. The one who really, really loved Christmas so that she moved to a town in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan called Christmas, Michigan, and bought a store called Santa's Workshop with a 20-foot Santa or 50-foot Santa out front.
Santaland.
Yeah. I mean, they have people from all over the world sending letters there just to be post-stamped that it was, you know,
Christmas, Michigan.
Sent from Santa's Workshop.
Oh.
Santa's Workshop stamp. Yeah. Thinking back when I was a kid, like the big times that we did holiday stuff was when, you know, we went to, with my dad to, generally my Aunt Sharon's place for family reunions on, Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I guess it was fun because I was a little more extroverted when I was a kid, not realizing that people thought I was still annoying anyway, but, thinking back now, just, these are people that would get together twice a year and, you know, they love each other. Family does. And I do love my family, blah, blah, blah. But just that uncomfortable feeling of having to pretend you have this in-depth, deep relationship with somebody who is related to you, but you only see twice a year. And I don't see
living in the same town.
Not necessarily. Some did. Some of my family did, but like my Uncle Brian, for instance, him and his wife live in Pontiac, Michigan, the other side of the state.
Right. But that's like close enough to drive and visit. Like, that's not like my family and me who are 3,000 miles apart.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hence, you know, why they only showed up twice a year. But I just didn't like that idea of forced connection, you know, like I'm more of a found family type person. I don't have a big list of people in my life, but the ones that are in my life, I cherish deeply. And it's, and I just something about that family reunion type atmosphere just repelled me, you know, growing up. In fact, my grandmother, who's recently celebrated her 99th birthday, you know,
wowza.
Yeah, ended up showing you some pictures of my family there, and you can kind of see it in their faces too. That whole, I'm smiling because I want to look like I'm having a good time, but I'm in an old folks home celebrating a birthday with people dying in front of me. And my grandma too had, of course, had a beer can. In
oh my God, that is ridiculous.
Yeah. So that's my family folks. So I've not really been one to really like the holidays. I've had good stories about the holidays, like I mentioned with my mother, and everything with the turkey, mm-hmm. for instance. But, mm-hmm. you know, like when I was an adult and ran into my ex-wife, who used to be a Jehovah's Witness or whatever, I don't know, anyway, with her, you know, I just never really ever celebrated the holidays apart from when I was a kid. So they've never been important to me.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, I got to experience this. So going with that mindset, you know, I guess I'm lucky in some ways that I don't have to deal with the list that we're going to go through here with today's main event. You know, from our article, from an article from our friends at Psychology Today called Six Manipulative Behaviors to Watch for at Holiday Gatherings.
Oh, yes. So...
yeah, this kind of coincides too with a wonderful meme and a video the Reverend Tracy created. You know, this time of year last year, and I think for the past couple of years around this time of year, we've tried to bring up topics about mental health during the holidays because the studies show this is one of the most stressful times of the year. And I think part of it is because you do have people that don't normally hang out every day in each other's lives coming together and feeling they have to interact. But then Uncle Frank says something political and next thing you know, there's a fist fight.
Mm-hmm. You know? Exactly. I was lucky enough growing up that all my family kind of was of the same political persuasion. Mm. So I never had to deal with that.
I don't care. For me, I hate the fact that we got into this situation today with politics, that people feel comfortable talking about their political opinions all the time. I don't get that. You know, I can only, you know, think of myself in my shoes when it comes to politics. And like, like recently on my Facebook memories, I, you know, about 12 years ago, I had a website where I did write about my political opinions. And I'm going back, like, why did I think this was good?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it is not that I was not informed. It's just that I was not informed enough to be speaking on it, and I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
So anything coming out of my mouth, you know, even if it was right, was still wrong. You know, because I was not a person that should be listened to. I'm not a person, mm-hmm. I'm not a policy person that works, you know, with the actual stuff that you know, government goes through every day. I'm not, you know, I'm not an expert. You know, again, that doesn't mean I'm not informed, but I think too many people think that, you know, what they listen to on the radio or watch on, you know, TV makes them experts. And why ruin that? You know, I want to get back to a point to where you can have, you know, a dinner with a relative who agrees politically with you without either of you having to worry about that because you're both not fucking experts, you know?
Yeah, and people need to have some humility about their opinions.
Yeah. Well, anyway, like I mentioned, we got a list here. We're going to go through the six manipulative behaviors to watch for at holiday gatherings. We're going to read the bullet points and then give you some of our thoughts. So did you want to tackle the first one or did you want me to?
I totally can.
Let's do it.
So let's talk about gaslighting.
Oh, a topic we've discussed on the show before.
Yes. So there were so many searches for gaslighting in 2022 that Merriam-Webster named it their word of the year. It's a type of deception intended to cause someone to question what is real or factual, or to question his or her judgment. For example, a relative who repeatedly drops hints that a woman is overweight or eating too much when her weight and appetite are normal might be gaslighting her. So, definitely don't like that.
Bad. Gaslight bad.
Bad. Gaslighting is hard for me to pick out.
It's hard. I think part of this too is, I mean, if you think about this in a family situation, like you don't want to assume a family member is going to treat you like dirt. You want it because like, if you have some, and this, you know, the example they brought up is admittedly going to be, you know, something women probably experience more than guys do, but there are overweight guys too that are just overweight. They're health, perfectly healthy, just have a few extra pounds and still have people, you know, talking to them about this. And, you know, the people that are stating, you know, should you be eating that much, in their hearts, they think they're doing something nice, but they're not. They're being assholes in this particular case. And when you do have people that, you know, are trying to like make you question whether something is good or not, like one moment where my ex-wife gaslit me when I told her, I was like, I want to start a blog to where I review a comic book a day. And she goes, I don't think that would be a good idea in this town. This town being like one of the big hubs on the Pacific, on the West Coast of not only comic book companies, but comic book artists and writers.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, not a good idea. Thanks.
Right, because it was factually, it was a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And she was trying to make you think that it was not a good idea.
Yeah, like, why even try?
Mm-hmm.
That's where that was coming from. And I think, you know, if there's a domino that I can think of that helped kind of tip start us, you know, going our separate ways, that for there was it for me.
Really?
Yeah, because let's put it this way. I got to be honest. If it weren't for that blog, I don't know if we're here today.
Well, sure.
Because the blog, you know, got me writing every day. And then that got me noticed by a couple of websites that, you know, had me write for them for some time. And, you know, one of them being Latina Review Media, you know, a site that would routinely get, like, you know, like a million hits a month. You know,
wow,
yeah, so it pretty decent company, but you know, it was from there that, you know, that I was writing for them when I met the Reverend Tracy, and then that's how Friends Talking Nerdy came to be.
Nice,
yeah, so
that's such a cool story,
yeah, and all because I ignored being gaslit,
yeah, right,
you know,
I think I often ignore being gaslit.
Yeah, you don't want to assume the person saying that to you is necessarily bad. You want to give them the benefit of the doubt that this family member, in this case, because we're talking about holiday gatherings, this family member or important person, shared family, that they wouldn't want to hurt you. But people can still hurt you even if they don't mean it.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
it's that whole intent versus impact thing that we talk about quite a lot.
Yeah, indeed. And I think this kind of ties in with the next one here. So shall I dive into that?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Oh, by the way, I do forget. This article was written by Dale Hartley, MBA, PhD. All right. Second one, backhanded compliments. You've probably heard the old gag about a socially awkward boy complimenting his date by saying, "You don't sweat much for a fat girl." That's a backhanded compliment. A more realistic one might be, "You seem happier now that you're finally employed," or "You look good in that dress. I had one like it, but I gave it to Goodwill."
Yeah, those were funny to me. So I have this happen quite a bit because I happen to be a fat-bodied person. And I don't want anybody to say anything to me about my body. It's not their business.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thought about it. And so I think people know that now about me that I spend holidays with, right? And so sometimes they will try to address something without addressing it head on.
And then that's when they see the professor that I see on the road driving.
Yeah.
This kind of goes into the topic that we talked about on episode 332. As we record this, it was last week's episode. That whole part of for your age. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, when we talk about you're pretty for your age. Like, yeah, what does the age have to do with it? For the backhanded compliment, you know, like what does why do I need to know, like, if I'm wearing a dress that you find physically nice, why do you need to tell me that, oh, it, yours didn't work out, so you gave it to a thrift shop?
Yeah.
You know, I just, it's about watching your words. And again, people that say this stuff, and we're all human, I'm sure. I can't recall me ever saying anything like that. But, you know, having said that, I understand that there would probably be a long list of people that would say, well, Tim, how about X, Y, and Z? I'm human.
How about the time you did this?
I'm human. You know, so we all are capable of doing this. I think the important thing here is to, one, when it comes to yourself, do what you can to be humble. And if you are approached by somebody stating, hey, you said this and it kind of hurt my feelings, don't be defensive, apologize, and make every effort to not do it again. But two, if you are the person receiving this information, the important thing here is, most importantly, just because they are family, if this is something you are routinely getting on a regular basis, they don't have to be in your life.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty abusive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah. I mean, there's a difference between like a verbal foot in your mouth and someone who constantly does it every year that you see them. And, you know, one thing that, you know, that I've come to appreciate, I know the Reverend Tracy has talked about it on multiple occasions, and I know you've talked about it before, is the importance of found family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because those people, you know, are going to be better for you overall. And found family can include, you know, members of your blood.
Own family.
Of your own family as well. But, you know, here the thing is, you know, don't put up with this. Don't put up with this. Even if you think someone is, even if all you have to do to the person is just pull them aside and just say it quietly without alerting it on social media or like, this guy's a scumbag. You know, don't put up with this. Stand up for yourself
I mean, I think that's much easier said than done for some people.
I agree.
I think it is a developmental process when you start to separate from your family, just like you did when you were a child and you had to separate from your family. And life is just sort of a series of separations from what you thought was the most important thing when you were a child, which was your family.
Hmm.
But as adults, we get to make choices. So make those choices and don't choose to stay in situations that don't feed yourself.
Yeah. Figuratively and literally.
Yes.
The holidays.
Yes.
I think the point here is, what I was not implying, and I did not articulate this enough, what I was not implying was, you know, the first sight of something slightly wrong, shun them for the rest of your life. Not saying that. We're talking here repeat offenders.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I say it's developmental, because it's this thing that you had to put up with because you had no choice.
Yeah.
And then it's that process of awakening to, oh, this person that I love and that I certainly love
is an asshole.
Is not somebody I want to be associated with. You know, is not somebody I want to spend time with because they're not respecting me.
Without naming them if you don't want to or anything like that, but have you ever, and without obviously giving any details that could indicate to anybody who it is, have you had to shun a family member?
I wouldn't say shun. I think that's too active. Mm. I mean, I think what many people do and what I've done with some family members is just let the relationship lie.
Mm. Like an old musty rug.
Yeah, like I don't feel the need to try to change anybody else. I think that's a failing proposition. But again, that's why I say it's developmental. Like until you realize that you have no control over anybody else or what they feel, think, say, or do, then you get caught up in that stuff. But once you realize that that's just their choices and will always be their choices and you get to make your own choices, then I think is easier to deal with that sort of thing.
Which kind of ties into the next bullet point here. So shall I dive into that one?
No, I think it's my turn.
No.
Pushing your buttons.
Oh, yeah, it is your turn. Read the next bullet point.
Thank you. My former brother-in-law's habitual lateness for family meals was his way of pushing my buttons and those of my ex-wife. I was able to put an end to this passive-aggressive game by using the right countermeasure at the right time. MADAR, or Machiavellian Advanced Detection and Resistance, is a set of skills for recognizing and outwitting master manipulators. MADAR is explained in my book, Machiavellian's Gulling the Rubes. One of these skills is leverage, which is what I used against my intentionally tardy brother-in-law. Matching the right tactic to each situation is essential to the effective use of MADAR. Okay, this kind of...
I don't think it was the best example, because if we're talking... If this brother-in-law was only there for, like, Thanksgiving, but he showed up, like, an hour or two late or something like that, unless he was the one bringing the turkey, you know, I don't see how this example... he didn't give us enough information to state exactly what this guy, what this ex-brother-in-law was doing apart from being late.
Yeah, I mean, I had a spouse for a while, and that spouse, they would get insulted if people started eating before they got there, but then they were always late. And I never understood that. I'm always like, no, go ahead, do whatever you need to do. If I'm not there, that's my fault.
Yeah, I mean, at a family gathering, that would be utterly ridiculous. Or a social gathering of any sort, making sure the party doesn't start until you're there.
Right.
Essentially is what's happening there. Like, yeah, that is ridiculous. And that's pushing buttons, too, because that's you know, I think it was explained in here, you know, they're using their leverage of their time to, you know, take it away in order for what, I don't know. But, you know, you'd have to really examine what was being gained by the person being late. But I think in, you know, the example you brought up, I think it was... person wanted to be a center of attention. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know.
It happens.
People's got to be people's.
Yeah.
People's is people's.
Yeah. Usually the first go around in marriage is usually not the best one.
I don't know that any go around in marriage would be the best one for me, is what I realized in my first marriage.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason to get married would be if it benefited you and the partner you have in your life in some way, shape, or form.
Sure. I mean, and that's why, kind of why I got married the first time, was that, like, it just made so much sense from the perspective of a couple living together and sharing expenses and being able to cover the health insurance, for example, all of those things.
Cool. All right. Shall I go on with the next one? That is actually my turn.
Yes.
All right. Boundary blindness. Some boundaries are legally enforceable. For example, if I hit you, I can be charged with a crime. What? That's what happened. No, anyway. But
that's why I was in jail.
Yeah, shit. But most of our boundaries aren't legally protected. Someone talking loudly on their phone in a public place, for example, requires that we either endure it, leave the area, or grab a taser. No, or risk a possible confrontation by saying something to the loud talker. What are your options when someone absentmindedly drums his or her fingers on the table during a meeting or keeps whispering in a theater? These inconsiderate individuals are blind to other people's boundaries. You might encounter these kinds of intrusive questions and behaviors during the holidays. So, when are you two going to get married? Wow, that's a nice car. How much did you pay for it? Here, have some more eggnog. No, I insist. Don't be a party pooper. We've all had relatives like that.
I mean, they're essentially, it's like peer pressure. It's like invasions of privacy.
It's also like my aunt was guilty of this too. And I think that's part of the reason why I don't go to holiday gatherings anymore, of like, why are you not having the same feelings for the holidays that I do?
Right.
You should have these feelings.
Why aren't you having a good time?
You should put this silly hat on. You should do this. You should do that. And you got to be able to respect the fact that, you know, when it comes to a holiday gathering, at least, not everybody is going to want to celebrate in the way that you do. That doesn't mean that they don't appreciate the time together. Mm-hmm. But people are different. People are wired different. You know, I'm wired pretty damn different. I know that for a fact. And, having somebody totally dismiss your boundaries is not a fun feeling, especially when it does, again, come from somebody who is supposed to be someone who is a positive force in your life, you know, a member of your family.
Yeah, I mean, I think I really understand this one. I have pretty sensitive, I'm pretty sensitive to people not respecting my boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens quite often. And otherwise, nice seeming people will push your boundaries because they think you need that to happen. Like they need to somehow fix you or intervene in your life or, you know,
yeah,
give you unreciprocated affection or, you know, anything like that where I have a boundary. I don't like to be touched by people who are not my intimate partners.
Or think about it. This is one I that happened to me when I was a young parent. If you have a young kid, you don't need them eating lots of candy after a certain time of day.
Right.
And if you have a grandparent like my mother did on plenty of occasions, which is why we ended up not going to her house as much. If you have a parent who continually says, oh, they're just kids, let me treat them, even though you tell that parent, no, that's another way that they're pushing your boundary. And that is, again, completely disrespectful because in that particular case, what my mother did was stating your rule as parent means shit.
Mm-hmm. My grandmother did the same thing with me when I was a kid. And neither my sister nor I have any children. So there's just one child of the next generation in my whole family. And so this child got a lot of attention and still gets a lot of attention and she deserves it. She's totally awesome. But she was often given things or told things or shown how to do things as a very small child that her parents did not want her to see or learn or do. And I find that incredibly disrespectful to parents.
And that is breaking a boundary. Like, you don't know what you, if you don't know why a parent has a rule in place, you shouldn't break that rule.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that is just a fact. And when it comes to stuff like kids, that is the one thing that I have seen routinely over the years of, you know, people in family situations have, it seems like they have no real qualms on breaking that boundary. Like, you know, when are you going to have a baby? Like any young married couple is going to experience that. You know, when are you going to have that baby? You know, whether it's adopting or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, not something you shouldn't put, you should not put up with it. And, you know, like I said, this is not something to where if it happens to you once, you completely, you know, evict the person from your life forever, you know, but people that do this generally continually do this.
Yeah.
And be mindful of it, watch for it. And, you know, you got to, at the end, the older you get too, like I said, I had to stop seeing my mother as often because she would routinely do that. You know, that was disrespectful to me and my ex-wife at the time. And that didn't help the kids either.
Nope.
Yeah. All right. How about the next one? Okay, something I wish more kids did.
The silent treatment. So this is another passive aggressive affront. Anything you might do in response allows the perpetrator to feign surprise and blame you for being overly sensitive. Usually the best response is not to change your behavior in the slightest, ignore their behavior, and give the offending person no satisfaction. However, if the silence can't be ignored, like when one is shunning you, is the host, one's own spouse, or a guest in one's home, then dealing with it may be the only option. Leaving or asking the guests to leave is probably best. You might politely inquire about their muteness, but any response will likely be defensive and not amenable to resolving the matter. So the silent treatment, really? Is this happening with adults, with other adults? Like,
well, we know it is. I mean, it, you know, people are petty and don't really change that much from kids apart from being able to express themselves better the older they get. So,
well, I mean, you know, I think that's interesting because I think people are playing out their scripts, right? And the when we are put back in the situations that we were in as kids that maybe we found troublesome, in terms of those relationships haven't changed, and our relationships to those people haven't really changed. We're different. And so our interpretations of that behavior are different. But people are going to continue to do what they do.
They are. And when it comes to a family situation, like if it is really that obvious that someone at a family gathering is a problem, whether it is the host and you're the guest or vice versa, why was that situation created? You know, like it
right. Why did you invite that person?
Yeah, it would honestly be like me throwing a party and then me inviting my dad. I'm not talking to him, you know, but me inviting him would be an insult as well. You know, it's like if you do not have a good relationship with someone in your family, you know, don't invite him to a party, you know?
Yeah.
But having said that, that comes from a place of privilege, I guess. There are some people that, you know, even adults that for whatever reason, you know, can't get out of certain obligations or sure. feel they have to go or whatever. And again, I think this boils down to just know your worth, I guess. And yeah, just know when you encounter that right time to say, maybe I don't need to be around this person.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to press buttons and you don't want like something stupid where two people are not talking at a holiday gathering. And then one instant, like, you know, like they recommend it here at the bottom of why are you not talking, turn into a fist fight.
Mm-hmm.
Or a yelling match or something like that. Especially like think of how many holiday gatherings have adult beverages involved,
mm-hmm.
you know, and things could easily escalate from there. Yeah. If you feel the tension, leave. And if you are the host, just think better about who you invite.
Yeah. Don't invite people that you don't want to deal with.
Yeah. All right, shall I deal with the last bullet point?
Yes,
please. All right, triangulation. When children squabble with their siblings, they sometimes appeal to a parent to take their side against their brothers or sisters. This is a familiar version of triangulation, recruiting a third party as leverage in a relationship or a dispute. Some adult siblings are not immune to using this technique, especially if there has been a lifelong pattern of triangulation within the family. In fact, this kind of intra-family triangulation has a specific name, Karpman Drama Triangle.
Ooh.
Political and religious arguments, the bane of family gatherings this time of year, are especially prone to triangulation. I don't recall any instances where I've had to deal with anything like this. Granted, I grew up in a single-parent household, so and 9 times out of 10, my mother was supporting my sister anyway, so it's not like I could use her for leverage. Yeah, because like hell, I'll say this again. No matter how much Colleen wants to protest, she's the one who put her knee through a window. I was trying to save her life, and I did the responsible thing and had her call mom to admit what she did. Yet, who gets punished?
You did.
And she wanted to say, "Though, well, you shouldn't have tried to get me, dude. You shouldn't have been fucking up there. You're not a fucking cat." Anyway.
Well, so I will say that I have a lot of experience with this, and it's uncomfortable and unpleasant. So I think it's important to try, as hard as it is, in a group of people who have these kinds of relationships, it's really important to try and resolve conflicts and to not just sweep everything under the rug. And just say, oh, it's my family member, so I'm going to let them do whatever they want. I'm going to let them walk all over me because they're my family member.
And coming from the parents' perspective, and I know there are times where I did fail in this, but I love that they didn't mention it in here about how you will have a kid go to one parent because they think they will get a particular response. If you are that person that is being approached as part of the triangulation thing, it is vitally important you get both sides of the story. You know, because what this is referring to is one person, like, and it's common, you know, with kids too, like, you know, like, I saw, you know, little Billy do this, daddy, you should go punish them. And then the parent will go off the rail, punish the kid, only to find out that little Susie was helping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and take, if you are that person being approached, I think, again, I recommend talk to both sides. That will go a long way from preventing triangulation becoming a thing the older people get. If you can nip this in the bud when they're kids, if a kid can know that going to you isn't going to be a get out of jail free card, they're going to be less likely to, you know, try that in your 20s, 30s, 40s and on.
Yeah, I mean, you really had that dynamic with your sister, and...
Yeah, she's still laughing about that.
Yeah. I got him in trouble.
Overall, though, folks, the key here is this time of year is stressful in a lot of ways for people, you know, especially for families. You got kids, single parent or two parent household, you know, think toys aren't cheap. For holiday food for large gatherings isn't cheap. There's a lot of stress that's going on, and it is important this time of year especially, but every single day of the year, to focus on your mental health. When you do have extreme bits of stress like this that occur in such a short period, though, which is why we're bringing up this topic again, you got to protect yourself as much as you can. Give people leeway. People are human. People put their foot in their mouth. People do stupid things. You're guilty of that. I'm guilty of that. We're all guilty of that. But if this is consistent behavior that is not stopping, even if you, you know, do the, you know, like a private DM or a phone call or in person, pull them aside, just mano y mano, you know, saying this bothered me and it still goes on. That's the importance of found family too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because a person is part of your lineage on the ancestry, you know, family tree that you can pay for, doesn't mean that they really mean anything to you. That's a harsh thing to say, but, you know, the people that should be in your life are the ones that are going to uplift you and make you a better person. And if you have people that are constantly, consistently over years and years and years going through a lot of these things that we've talked about this episode, maybe it is best, as, you know, the Reverend Tracy's video on TikTok pointed out, maybe it is best to not have those people in your life anymore. It's not a decision, again, like I said, you don't want to do it like me, to where the slightest, you know, bit of any sort of negative energy that comes from your way from somebody, they immediately get banned from your life forever. But protect yourself. Protect yourself.
Sure.
Yep. Any other thoughts about the holidays?
Well, you know, I know we're going to talk about this as we go through the holiday season. You know, we will talk about the holidays again as things come up. Just encourage everybody to see your friends, see people that you don't get to see very often in the wintertime. Spend time doing the things you like to do with your extra free time. And just take care of yourselves at this time of year that can just be so stressful and so isolating and depressing and anxiety provoking, and basically all the bad stuff. Try to counteract that by taking care of yourself, which includes enjoying the social network that you have that's not your family.
Yes, yes. Well said. Well said. I agree with that there. And also, too, when it comes to the holidays, celebrate the holidays in the way that makes you happy. even if that means
you don't celebrate them,
or even if that means your idea of celebrating them is like getting a bag of Ruffles and bean dip and sitting down in front of the TV at night on the, you know, Christmas Eve watching Die Hard for the 9 millionth time. You know, if that is a holiday tradition, then by all means celebrate it. You know, this, the holidays are meant to be a good time after all. And if you keep it simple and just, you know, celebrate it by, you know, dressing up your cat in a wacky outfit, then I think you've had a successful holiday, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So enjoy yourselves.
Enjoy yourselves, baby. That's right.
That's right.
All right. Each Monday, we'll have something in this podcast space to entertain your ear holes. Until we meet again, we bid you adieu.
Good night.
Merry Christmas, motherfuckers.
Subscribe to Friends Talking Nerdy on iTunes, the Google Play Music Store, as well as Spotify. Remember to support Friends Talking Nerdy on Patreon. Goodbye, darling.